Welcome to episode number 46 of the Electrical Estimator Podcast. I'm your host, Ken Dickerson. Today, we're going below the surface, literally, to talk about one of the most important and misunderstood parts of our trade, underground electrical work. Whether you're building a school, a data center, or a stadium, the electrical system almost always begins underground. That's where the conduits, feeders, duct banks, and manholes live. And as any seasoned estimator will tell you, what happens underground can make or break a project's budget. Estimating underground work isn't just about counting conduits and multiplying by a labor unit. It's about understanding soil conditions, trench depth, backfill requirements, and coordination with every other trade on the job. It's dirty, it's complex, and if you miss something, it's expensive to fix. So today we're going to dig deep, pun intended, into how to estimate underground electrical work accurately and confidently. Let's start with the basics. What falls under underground electrical work? We're talking about everything that's buried below grade: conduits, duct banks, handholes, manholes, grounding grids, and feeder cables. Sometimes this also includes trenching for site lighting, parking lot power, and service entrances. The key is this: if it's buried in the dirt, you need to treat it differently than your above ground work. The first thing you should do when estimating underground work is study the civil drawings. Many electrical estimators make the mistake of only looking at the electrical sheets, but underground work lives in the civil set. That's where you'll find trench details, site elevations, and existing utilities. The civil drawings tell you how deep your trenches must be, what type of backfill is required, and where the other utilities are located. If you miss a note about concrete encased duct banks or controlled backfill, your estimate could be off by thousands. Next, review the electrical site plan and trace every underground run. Mark out your service feeders, duct banks, and branch circuits. Label each one with its size, number of conduits, and length. If the project includes multiple duct banks, make sure you understand what each one carries: power, communication, fire alarm, or fiber optics. Some duct banks might run parallel in the same trench, others must be separated by specific distances. These details affect trench width, depth, and cost. Now let's talk about trenching. Trenching is where many estimators lose control of costs because they underestimate labor. The difficulty of trenching depends on the soil conditions, the depth of the trench, and the location. Digging in soft soil on an open field is one thing. Digging through rock, clay, or existing pavement is another story entirely. If you see notes on the civil drawings that say rock excavation may be required, assume the worst until proven otherwise. Rock excavation requires special equipment, slower production, and sometimes even blasting. Always include a contingency or unit cost for that risk. The width and depth of the trench determine not only labor, but also backfill volume. Specifications often require select backfill, meaning clean, screened material, rather than just whatever dirt came out of the trench. Some projects even require sand bedding around conduits for protection. That means you'll need to figure quantities for imported materials and disposal of excavated spoil. Don't assume you can reuse what you dig up. Contract documents often prohibit it. Let's talk about duct banks. A duct bank is a group of conduits, usually encased in concrete, that carry high-capacity feeders. You'll find them feeding transformers, switchgear, or manholes. Duct banks require careful layout, formwork, spacers, and reinforcement. Each additional conduit adds width, weight, and labor. As an estimator, you must understand the configuration: how many conduits wide, how many high, and how much concrete is around them. Concrete encased duct banks are labor intensive. Crews must dig the trench, set spacers, tie rebar, install the conduits, pour the concrete, and backfill. Include time for inspection and curing delays. If the duct bank crosses under roads or driveways, it might require duct bank encasement sleeves or bore crossings, which are expensive and slow. Always read the trench detail sections carefully. Sometimes a simple duct bank symbol on the plan hides a very complicated cross section in the detail sheet. Next, let's talk about manholes and handholes. These are access points for pulling cable and splicing conductors. They're heavy, they're deep, and they require coordination with the site contractor. You'll need equipment to set them, conduit stub-ups into the walls, and sometimes sump pumps or grounding. Precast manholes vary in price depending on size and depth, but don't forget the small things: riser sections, pulling irons, racks, and grounding inserts. If the specifications call for cast-in-place manholes, your cost just went up significantly because now you're dealing with formwork and curing. A common mistake in underground estimating is forgetting the restoration costs. After the trench is backfilled, someone has to restore pavement, curbs, and landscaping. If your scope includes complete restoration, make sure to include asphalt patching, concrete sidewalks, and seed or sod replacement. That's real money, and it's easy to overlook. Let me share a quick story. Years ago, I was estimating an underground feeder installation for a hospital expansion. The drawing showed a simple duct bank between the existing switchgear and the new building. On paper, it looked easy. But during the site visit, I noticed that the duct bank crossed under a main entrance drive lined with decorative pavers. Replacing those pavers wasn't in the drawings, but it was absolutely going to be required. We included an allowance for demolition and restoration. The competitor didn't, and when construction started, the change order cost them thousands. The lesson? If it's in your path, it's in your price. Now let's move on to labor productivity. Underground work is heavily influenced by access, depth, and weather. Rain, mud, and frozen ground all slow production. Include factors for weather delays, especially if the project runs through winter months. Also consider access. If your trenches are in tight spaces, near existing structures, or around heavy traffic, productivity will drop. Your crew won't dig as fast or move as freely as they would in open ground. Safety also affects labor. Deep trenches require shoring or sloping for protection. That means extra time for installation and removal. If you're working around existing utilities, your crew will need to dig carefully to avoid damage. Include time for locating and exposing existing utilities by hand, often called potholing. It's slow work, but it's mandatory on most projects. Next, think about coordination with other trades. Underground work is crowded. You're sharing the trench or the site with plumbers, mechanical contractors, and civil crews. If your conduits have to go under or around other utilities, that adds complexity and time. Always check the utility coordination drawings to see the elevation of each system. If your power conduits are below storm or sanitary piping, your trench will be deeper and your cost higher. Now let's talk about cable installation. Pulling wire through underground conduit is harder than it looks. Long runs, bends, and elevation changes increase pulling tension. You may need pull boxes or intermediate manholes to stay within code limits. Include labor for pulling lubricant, rigging equipment, and testing. If the feeders are large, say 500 kilomils and above, you'll need multiple conductors per phase and possibly cable reel, jacks, or tuggers. Testing and grounding are also part of underground work. Every duct bank and feeder must be measured, and the grounding system must be tested for resistance. Large projects may require a grounding grid, a network of bare copper conductors buried around the building or substation. Copper prices fluctuate constantly, so always update your material pricing before bid day. Let's talk about equipment and rentals. Underground work requires specialized tools, excavators, trenchers, tampers, and lifts. If your company owns them, great. If not, you'll need to rent. Include costs for delivery, fuel, maintenance, and operator time. Don't forget temporary fencing, trench plates, and erosion control. The general contractor or civil subcontractor might require you to follow strict environmental regulations for silt fencing and stormwater management. One of the biggest challenges in underground estimating is dealing with unknown conditions. You can't see what's underground until you start digging. You might find old foundations, unmarked utilities, or groundwater. Smart estimators protect themselves by including clarifications and contingencies. For example, you might note, price assumes normal soil conditions and no rock excavation. Additional cost for unforeseen obstructions will be handled as change order. That statement doesn't eliminate risk, but it gives you a fair starting point. Another good practice is to coordinate early with the site contractor. If the general contractor is hiring a separate excavation crew, find out if they're responsible for trenching and backfill. Sometimes the electrical contractor only installs conduit and cable, while the site contractor handles the dirt work. Other times, the electrical contractor owns the entire trench. Clarify that scope early. It can make a huge difference in your estimate. Here's another story. We were bidding a university project where the electrical drawings showed an extensive underground duct bank system. The bid document said, site excavation by others. So the estimator assumed the general contractor's site crew would handle the trenching. After the bid, it turned out by others meant not included, and the electrical contractor was responsible for all trenching. The oversight added nearly $500,000 in unaccounted labor. The project was built, but the profit was gone. Lesson learned: if you don't know who's digging the trench, you better find out before bid day. Now let's talk about pricing strategy. Underground work involves a lot of small parts: conduit, elbows, spacers, wire, concrete, and backfill. The best way to manage it is to break it down by system and by trench section. For each run, identify the number of conduits, the type of encasement, and the distance. Multiply your quantities by the correct labor unit and add a productivity factor for field conditions. Include separate line items for duct banks, handholes, manholes, and grounding. Then add your excavation, backfill, and restoration. When you review your total, ask yourself whether it feels realistic based on similar past projects. If it looks too low, it probably is. Testing, commissioning, and as-built drawings are also part of your cost. Underground systems require record documentation showing exact conduit locations and elevations. Include administrative hours for preparing those drawings and attending inspections. As we bring this conversation to a close, let's step back and look at the big picture. Estimating underground electrical work isn't glamorous. It's muddy, detailed, and filled with hidden challenges. But it's also the foundation of every project. If you get it right underground, everything above ground goes smoother. The key is to approach it like a detective. Study every note, every section, every civil drawing. Visit the site if you can. Ask questions, verify assumptions, and plan for the unknown. Because once the trench is closed, mistakes stay buried, but their costs don't. Thank you for listening to the iBid Electric podcast. Estimating underground electrical work is one of the toughest skills to master, but it's also one of the most valuable. When you can confidently price what others guess at, you become more than an estimator. You become the person your company trusts when the job gets real.